everyone. This is Reverend Dr. Roger Paul. And tonight we're going to study paper 90, Shamanism, Medicine Men, and Priests. And this starts on page 986.1, or paper 901. And we'll say a little prayer and get started. Father, thank you for bringing us together tonight that we might study this wonderful revelation. We thank you for the opportunity to serve and that we might teach others what we learn in these meetings and share it that they might be more enlightened in their life. We thank you for all the blessings of our world and our planet. And that you'll be with us during this meeting, that we might learn something and share with others, and others might be able to find it. We say this in your son's name, Jesus Christ. All right, paper 90. Shamanism, medicine man, and priest. The evolution of religious observances progressed from placation, avoidance, exorcism, coercion, conciliation, and propitiation to sacrifice, atonement, and redemption. The technique of religious ritual passed from the forms of the primitive cult through fetishes to magic and miracles, and as ritual became more complex in response to men's increasingly complex concept of the material realms, it was inevitably dominated by medicine men, shamans, and priests. I have a nice little picture. Oh, nice. Well, this was the that's what we just heard. Sorry about that, John. And this is a nice little picture of a shaman in his hut. And you can see he's got his little mechanism he's holding on to, and all his little paraphernalia laying around him, and he's trying to get somebody well.
In the advancing concepts of primitive man, the spirit world was eventually regarded as being unresponsive to the ordinary mortal. Only the exceptional among humans could catch the ear of the gods. Only the extraordinary man or woman would be heard by the spirits. Religion thus enters on a new phase, a stage wherein it gradually becomes second-handed. Always does a medicine man, a shaman, or a priest intervene between the religionist and the object of worship. And today, most deranged systems of organized religious belief are passing through this level of evolutionary development.
All right, so in other words, for you to contact the spirit world, the early humans believed they had to have a shaman, a priest, or a medicine man to be able to do this. Would you say Millie's history? Rodney, would you take the next one, please?
Sure. Evolutionary religion was born of a simple and all-powerful fear. The fear which surges through the human mind when confronted with the unknown, the inexplicable, and the incomprehensible. Religion eventually achieves the profoundly simple realization of an all-powerful love, a love which sweeps irresistibly through the human soul when awakened to the conception of the limitless affection of the universal Father for the sons of the universe. But in between the beginning and the consummation of religious evolution, there intervene the long ages of the shamans, who presume to stand between man and God as an intermediaries, interpreters, and intercessors.
All right, so early man did realize that the Universal Father actually dwelled within the human being, right? And we know that now. So we know we can communicate with God directly through our Father gesture, or our Father breath, right? And so these early men were not aware of this. So they truly believed they had to have an intermediary to even contact God, rather than knowing that they could contact God directly through themselves. So this is where the shamans and the priests came in. All right.
One, the first shamans, the medicine men. The shaman was a ranking medicine man, a ceremonial fetishman, and the focused personality for all the practices of evolutionary religion. In many groves, the shaman outranked the war chief, marking the beginning of the church domination of the state. The shaman sometimes functioned as a priest and even as a priest king. Some of the latter tribes had both the earlier shaman medicine men, seers, and the later appearing shaman priests. And in many cases, the office of shaman became hereditary.
So they pass it down to their sons.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah.
What does that word groves mean?
Well, it's supposed to be group.
Group? Oh, okay.
Group. Yeah, I've got cut off.
That's weird.
It's groves?
It's not groves, it's
group.
Group.
Oh, it's just in groups. In many groups.
Groups, the shaman.
You know,
yeah.
That's a misspelling.
Yeah, that's probably a copying error.
Yeah.
You can blame Roger on
that. Well, I was right on the money.
Well, I've got my book right here, and I said this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I read off the screen, yeah.
Millie, would you take the next one, please?
Yes. Since in olden times, anything abnormal was ascribed to spirit possession, any striking mental or physical abnormality, any striking mental or physical abnormality constituted qualification for being a medicine man. Many of these women were epileptic. Many of the women hysteric. And these two types accounted for a good deal of ancient exploration, as well as spirit and devil possession. Quite a few of these earliest of priests were a class which has since been denominated paranoid.
So all you had to do to be a medicine man was to be a little bit mentally ill, right? So, Tim, would you take the next one, please?
While they may have practiced deception in minor matters, the great majority of the shamans believed in the fact of their spirit possession. Women who were able to throw themselves into a trance,
Cataleptic
fit became powerful. Shamanism.
It's a woman shaman.
Shamanism. Later, such women became prophets and spirit mediums. Their cataleptic trances usually involved alleged
alleged
communications with the ghost of the dead. Many female shamans were also professional dancers. Oh. You know what, Roger? I saw this documentary in India, and this guy was going, nee, 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 and the woman was just dancing around in a trance, and, you know,
yeah.
And just, whoa.
Yeah.
It was so hilarious.
Yeah. And we know they can't communicate with the dead, right? Because people are not allowed to communicate back to this planet once they leave for at least a whole millennium. So, and only after then, in special circumstances, if they're assigned to the planet in some function. So they wouldn't contact anybody when they came back.
No, but there is a majority of people, you know, that do believe in that.
Oh, there is. And it's just not true. You know, they're being duped by whoever is leading the thing.
Well, there's some people that are very good at it.
Oh, there, yeah. It sounds authentic, but it's not. Let's see. Bribing.
Okay, but not all shamans were self-deceived. Many were shrewd and able tricksters. As the profession developed, novice was required to serve an apprenticeship, often years of hardship and self-denial, to qualify as a medicine man. Shamans developed a professional mode of dress and affected a mysterious conduct. They frequently employed drugs to induce certain physical states, which would impress and mystify the tribesmen. Sleight of hand feats were regarded as supernatural by the common folk, and ventriloquism was first used by shrewd priests. Many of the olden shamans unwittingly stumbled onto hypnotism. Others induced auto-hypnotism by prolonged staring at their neighbors.
You know, they talk about using drugs to get to these states. You know, we had a period of time like that, you know. They call it the 60s.
Hey, Roger, what is the auto-hypnosis?
Auto-hypnosis? There's several types of hypnosis out there. I studied this for a couple of years in college. And one of these things is auto-hypnosis. In other words, you're able to put yourself into hypnosis yourself rather than have somebody hypnotize you. And then there's something called somnipulant wake and suggestion. And under somnipulant wake and suggestion, you can basically train yourself or have someone else do it. Certain suggestions so that when you come out of the hypnotic state, you're more able to receive those suggestions. So there's a lot to hypnotism.
You don't have to stare at your neighbor.
You don't have to stare at your neighbor to go into auto
hypnosis. Neighbor, honey, not neighbor.
What did I say, neighbor?
You're in the state for auto hypnosis.
That's right.
When you're going to sleep at night, it's just before you go to sleep.
Right.
You're still aware. Not quite awake, not quite asleep. That's the time when you're susceptible to auto-hypnosis, where you can tell yourself, I'm not going to do this, or I am going to do that.
That's right. Yeah.
That's when you do positive affirmations.
That's when you do positive affirmations. That's correct.
You shut out today and you're not going to sleep. So you're in some place that's not functioning on regular level.
Yeah, many people don't realize when they go through hypnosis classes and things like that that a good many of the people when I was taking these classes would actually fall completely asleep when they were hypnotized. Not into a hypnotic state, but they would go just over that auto-hypnosis realm and they would just go to sleep. We'd have to wake them up.
You know, there's some mediums that actually have to be hypnotized in order for them to go into a trance where apparently the spirit guide will take over the body.
And we know that's not true, right? You know that, Tim.
So have you ever seen anything like that?
I've seen lots of things. Yeah, I've seen lots of things.
Does change.
Yeah, I've seen lots of things like that.
The personality is altered.
Yeah, but...
But in psychology, which of course I'm sure they don't believe that, is there a word for it? I mean, what's going on? Is it an altered ego? Because I've seen people on YouTube, they have a British accent, any kind of accent you can imagine.
The human mind is a magnificent thing. And
that's correct.
Your own imagination can come up with things that are just unbelievable. It really does. You know, and some of them have, you know, things in their past that give them this ability, and some of them don't. You know, so.
See, there's a lot of parts of the brain that haven't been explored by scientists that are still unknown.
Yeah. But we know from the book that two things don't happen. We don't have possession of humans by other spirits, okay? And we don't have devil and demon possessions any longer on this planet. That hadn't happened since Pentecost. And you can look that up in Jesus' papers. Right? All right. religions.
Yeah, right. You just read that.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Next one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you're put your mouse over in the list.
I think the mouse acts in that way.
You're going to have to go over to the list side and click on that, and then it'll work back to where you were.
That looks like I locked it or something. I'm sorry.
Sorry, y'all. Okay. Give me a second.
Only takes a while. While many resorted to these tricks and deceptions, their reputation as a class, after all, stood on apparent achievement. When a shaman failed in his undertakings, if he could not advance a plausible alibi, he was either demoted or killed. Thus, the Amish shamans early perished. Only the shrewd actors survived.
So if they didn't do what they were supposed to do, they would be killed by the tribe. It was shamanism that took the exclusive direction of tribal affairs out of the hands of the old and the strong and lodged it into the hands of the shrewd, the clever, and the farsighted. So the shamans were able to deceive the whole tribe of people. And, you know, what the point they're making here is before that, the affairs were in the affairs of the old and the strong, and they were taken away and given to the charlatans. Really? Will you take the next one, please?
Me?
Yep.
Two, shamanistic practices. Spirit conjuring was a very precise and highly complicated procedure, comparable to present-day church rituals conducted in an ancient tomb. The human race very early sought for the superhuman.
It's supposed to be superhuman.
Yeah. Revolution and men believed shamans utilized the great power of suggestion in their work. It was almost invariably negative suggestion. Only in very recent times has the technique of positive suggestion been employed. In the early development of their profession, the shamans began to specialize in such locations as rainmaking, disease healing, and crime detection. Just a minute. Mm-hmm. Get out of here. Okay. To heal diseases was not, however, the chief function of a shamanic medicine man. It was rather to know and to control the hazards of living.
I'm coming back to that bad luck thing again, right? Mm-hmm. All right. Tim.
Ancient black art, both religious and secular, was called white art when practiced by either priests, seers, shamans, or medicine men. The practitioners of the black art were called sorcerers, magicians, wizards, witches, enchanters. How do you pronounce that word?
Looks like necromancers.
Yeah, necromancers,
yeah.
Conjurers, and soothsayers. As time passed, all such purported contact with this
supernatural.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of
mistakes
in here. Supernatural was classified either as witchcraft or shamancraft. Huh?
I'm sorry, y'all. I don't have the time to proofread everything all the time.
I'm not sure what the word necromancer
is. Yeah,
that's probably a combination of two words, too.
Oh.
The prefix has to do with death and dying.
Yeah. Tim, or Rodney, would you take the next one, please?
Yes. Witchcraft embraced the magic performed by earlier, irregular, unrecognized spirits. Shamancraft had to do with miracles performed by regular spirits, then recognized God to the tribe. In later times, the witch became associated with the devil. And thus was the state fit for the many comparatively recent depictions of religious intolerance. Witchcraft was a religion with many primitive tribes.
And what are they talking about, the religious intolerance? We're talking about burning witches at the stake, you know, in the Middle Ages, especially. Right? But those who claimed to be witches. Right?
The shamans were great believers in the mission of chants as revelatory of the will of the spirits. They frequently cast lots to arrive at decisions. Modern survivals of this proclivity casting lots are illustrated, not only in the many games of chance, but also in the well-known counting algorithms.
Rhymes.
Once a person counted out must die. Now he is only it in some childish game. That which was serious business to primitive man has survived as a diversion of the modern child.
So some of these games children play, this. Of course, back then they would kill them. The medicine men put great trust in signs and omens, such as when you hear the sound of a rustling in the tops of the mulberry trees, then shall you bestir yourself. Very early in the history of the race, the shamans turned their attention to the stars. Primitive astrology was a worldwide belief and practice. Dream interpreting also became widespread. All this was soon followed by the appearance of those temperamental shamanesses who professed to be able to communicate with the spirits of the dead. It's interesting to hear where all this stuff comes from.
It is. It's interesting to hear this history.
Yeah.
How it evolved.
Millie, would you take the next one, please?
Yeah. Ancient origin, the rainmakers or weather shamans have persisted right on down through the ages. A severe drought meant death to the early agriculturalist. Weather control was the object of much ancient magic. Civilized man still makes the weather the common topic of conversation. The olden peoples all believed in the power of the shaman as a rainmaker, but it was customary to kill him when he failed, unless he could offer a plausible excuse to account for the failure.
Now, what excuse would he give them? That the tribe had been bad, or something that the tribe was doing was wrong, so that's why the rain would come. That would keep them from killing them sometimes. Sometimes not. Tim, would you take the next one?
Again and again did the Caesars banish the astrologers, but they invariably returned because of the popular belief in their powers. They could not be driven out. And even in the 16th century after Christ, the directors of Occidental Church and State were the patrons of astrology. Thousands of supposedly intelligent people still believe that one may be born under the domination of a lucky or unlucky star. That the
juxtaposition
of the heavenly bodies determine the outcome of various terrestrial adventures. Fortune tellers are still patronized by the credulous. Hey Roger, what does the word terrestrial and
talking about the adventures of the planets in the sky.
Terrestrial, so it means planet in the skies?
Yeah, well, it's outside our planet, basically.
Oh, it's outside our planet?
Yeah.
Okay. What are they talking about, the heavenly bodies?
You're talking about the stars.
Okay.
The stars, or planets. Yeah, and it's interesting here, they say thousands of supposedly intelligent people still believe that.
It's a spelled incorrectly. Was this whole, when it and you translated it into the
I just copied it
format.
With the mouse from the book to the slides.
Okay. So his words were spelled incorrectly in the book?
No, probably when it copied them, it transposed some of them.
Oh,
that's,
okay.
And it seems to be a lot tonight because she's the dead man.
Yeah, I know.
Because I take it right out of the Foundation's copy of the book.
Okay.
So it should be right. Apparently it's not. So it's probably some kind of electronic
problem.
Yeah. Because I'm copying these things really quickly. But y'all know that it takes me hours and hours and hours to prepare this stuff for each meeting. So by the time I get all the re-indexing done on the papers and that, and get to the point where I'm making slides, it's 8-10 hours into what I'm doing. So.
Well, I appreciate your hard work. Thank you, Roger.
Well, you're welcome. But it's just, this doesn't happen.
Yeah, this is unusual that somebody
yeah.
has to respond.
Okay. And I've lost it. Who's next?
I
think Roger.
Are the spirits messing with us?
Yeah. Spirits are messing with us.
Yeah, that's it.
The shamans are messing with me. I've been cursed. Go ahead, Roger.
And the great queen and the efficacy of oracular advice. The Chinese use magic as protection against demons. Shamanism flourished in India, and it still openly persists in Central Asia. It is an only recently abandoned practice throughout much of the world.
This oracular advice, they're talking about oracles. You know, many cultures believe in oracles, and that's what they're talking about. So.
Matrix.
Yeah, Matrix.
Ever and anon, true prophets and teachers arose to denounce and expose shamanism. Even the vanishing red man had such a prophet within the past 100 years. The Shani Chukawatowa, who predicted the eclipse of the sun in 1808 and denounced the vices of the white man. Many true teachers have appeared among the various tribes and races all through the long ages of evolutionary history, and they will ever continue to appear to challenge the shamans or priests of any age who oppose general education and attempt to thwart scientific progress.
There you go.
Hey, Roger, just a note here.
Yeah.
I heard that the Arantia Foundation had an editorial problem. So, just to let you know, that's not 1808, it's 1806.
Oh, okay.
Just to run that by everybody, the revelators didn't make the mistake. What happened was, the people typing it from the papers, you know, on a typewriter,
yeah.
She made a mistake. And if you don't believe me, try copying the New Testament and see if you make any mistakes, because that's how the New Testament kept, you know, a copy of a copy. Listen to Bart, what's his name? But no, the correct is 1806. I have it here right now in my reference edition.
Yeah.
That's not 1808.
So that's what this little star down here is supposed to be about, the footnote. And you're supposed to be able to click on that, but apparently I don't have an internet connection to this, so it won't come up. But that's what those are about. And on the Foundation website, on their copy, you can click on those. I think it's the Foundation, maybe the Fellowship. You can click on those, and it goes and tells you all the corrections and stuff. And on our website, it does the same thing on our paper website. So all those corrections. Okay. Who's up?
I just said,
I know.
Okay.
In many ways, and by devious methods, the olden shamans established their reputation as voices of God and custodians of providence. They sprinkled the boiling water and conferred names on them. They circumcised the males, they presided over all burial ceremonies, and they made due announcement of the safe arrival of the dead in spirit land.
So how nice of them, right?
Always nice to know you're one world around.
Yeah, they're in spirit land, so you have nothing to worry about. All right. Tim, would you take the next one?
The shamanic priest and medicine men often became very wealthy through the
Accretion.
Yeah, accretion. Of the various fees, which were...
Ostensibly.
Yeah, ostentatious.
Sensibly.
Offering to the spirits. Not infrequently, a shaman would accumulate practically all the material wealth of his tribe on the death of a wealthy man. It was customary to divide his property equally with the shaman on some public enterprise of charity. This practice still obtains in some parts of Tibet, where one half the male population belongs to this class of non-producers.
You know what you're talking about there, don't you? The shamans and the priests and the medicine men are considered non-producers. They don't have any active job where they work and make money, right? They're supported by the populace, right? And if you think about it, even the priests today, even the Catholic priests, are supported by the donations of the church, right? So they get paid through the church. So they don't actually, they don't labor at anything. And that's what they're talking about here. The half of the male population in Tibet belongs to this class of non-producers, and they're including monks and things like that that live in places that have such things like Tibet and India.
You know, when I was in the convent, we had the nuns were petitioning they wanted to be paid a regular amount because they were teachers, it was a Dominican order.
Yeah.
And so they were, there was a lot of controversy about that in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, well, they had free teachers through the service of the nuns.
Nuns wanted to have, they wanted to have control over, they wanted to have income so they could do things that they wanted to do personally also. And,
right. Rodney, I think you're up.
The shamans dressed well. They usually had a number of wives. They were the rightful parents, daughters. Being exempt from all tribal restrictions, they were very often of no great mind and morals. They
suppressed.
By nominating them witches or sorcerers, and very frequently rose to such positions of influence and power that they were able to dominate the chiefs or demons.
Well, I tell you, I love being corrected. It makes me feel like a student. And I love having you guys helping me out with words. It's just a fantastic feeling. It's so motivating.
Well, we're not correcting. We don't want to think we're correcting anybody. We're just helping everybody out.
I love to be helped because some of these words are confusing.
Even the simple ones.
Well, there are a lot of misspellings in this one, though.
You know what it may be? It may be.
Super simple words, the names of all the beings and
whatnot. Yeah.
It may be copying.
There's like over a million something words.
It may be copying them from the website I was using to copy it into this, and they may have characters in there. And I've noticed a lot of the U's are missing and things, so it may be.
Yeah, because it's suppressed,
The difference in the characterization from the web to the PowerPoints. That may be one of these. Did I change it? Let me change it. Okay.
Primitive man regarded the shaman as a necessary evil. He feared him but did not love him. Early man respected knowledge. He honored and rewarded wisdom. Shaman was mostly fraud, but the veneration for shamanism well illustrates supreme input on wisdom and evolution of the race.
So I think they kind of summed it up in that paragraph. It's pretty much wrong. Right? The shamanistic theory of disease and death. Since ancient man regarded himself and his material environment as being directly responsive to the whims of the ghosts and the fancies of the spirits, it is not strange that his religion should have been so exclusively concerned with material affairs. Modern man attacked his material problems directly. He recognizes that matter is responsive to the intelligent manipulation of mind. That's a very important sentence there. Primitive man likewise desires to modify and even to control the life and energies of the physical domains. And since his limited comprehension of the cosmos led him to believe that ghost spirits and gods were personally and immediately concerned with the detailed control of life and matter, he logically directed his efforts to winning the favor and support of these superhuman agencies.
That's what that word is, superhuman.
Yeah.
Superhuman. Hey, Roger.
Yeah.
What does that mean when they say matter is responsive to the intelligent manipulation of mind?
Okay, that's
what exactly is mind, too, in the Arantia terms?
Yeah, mind is, you know, you have three different areas in the making up of a human being, right? We have matter, mind, and spirit, right? Spirit's part of the soul. And in humans, we have what? The thought adjuster or father frame, right? But it is the mind material of the mind circuit, which comes from who?
The universal mother spirit.
Universal mother spirit. That's correct. And it's that same circuit that comes through us and gives us mind. And it is the mind part that controls physical matter. Okay.
Any kind of matter, like physical objects.
Whatsoever. If we knew how to control and manipulate the mind circuit, our own mind, we can manipulate any type of physical matter. Okay? And we're on the very first level here on this planet. You don't have people manipulating matter very much. The only ones I can think of that actually do that on this planet is probably the midwares, right? They're on a higher level. They're between matter and spiritual, so they have a better control of the mind circuit to manipulate matter. So in their jobs, occasionally, they have to manipulate matter. You never see them do it, but they're allowed to do it for certain exceptional things that need to be done. Okay, but it's the mind circuit that allows us to do that. And in every human has a part of him that is pure mind. And that comes from the universal mother spirit, right?
And the infinite spirit too, correct?
And the infinite spirit, that's correct. That's correct. Makes sense? It's a long definition for mind. Okay. Let's see. Oh, Amelia, you're on.
Viewed in this light, much of the inexplicable and irrational in the ancient cults is understandable. The ceremonies of the cult were primitive man's attempt to control the material world in which he found himself. And many of his efforts were directed to the end of prolonged life and ensuring health. Since all disease and death itself were originally regarded as spirit phenomena, it was inevitable that the shamans who are functioning as medicine men and priests should also have labored as doctors and surgeons.
And I guarantee I didn't get my degree from the shamanistic school.
Well, they said they're the
That's not why they call me doctor.
I don't know how much they're doing doctoring and cutting on me.
Yeah. All right. Tim, would you take the next one?
The primitive mind may be handicapped by lack of facts, but it is for all that logical. When thoughtful men observe disease and death, they set about to determine the causes of these visitations, and in accordance with their understanding, the shamans and scientists have propounded the following theories of affliction.
And I brought these up. Rodney, would you take the first one?
Number one, ghosts, direct with spirit influences. The earliest hypothesis advanced in explanation of disease and death was that spirits caused disease by enticing the soul out of the body. If it failed to return, death ensued. The ancients who feared the malevolent action of the disease-producing ghosts, that alien individuals would often be deserted without even food or water. Regardless of the erroneous basis for these beliefs, they did effectively isolate afflicted individuals and prevent the spread of contagious disease.
Okay, and the first one out of this, I want to make the point that we know that the soul never leaves the body, right, until death. So that cannot happen.
But hey, Roger.
Yeah.
If you were to be challenged, I'm sure all the listeners out there are probably thinking, some of them, you come to my house and I'll show you a ghost. Five things that will fly off the wall and hit you. There's plenty of evidence. There's plenty of, let's say, shows on TV. I just got done watching one.
Ghost Hunters?
You know, how would you, what would be your response?
I would say that that is not the ghost of human beings that have left.
Maybe a midwayer?
Could be a midwayer, could be a visiting student from another planet that don't understand the rules of not interfering with life on this planet. You know, there's
okay.
millions of beings that come to this planet and leave every day that are they're called student visitors, and they're from all sorts of walks of existence. You know, every kind of being we can possibly think of is on this planet all the time. So it probably what you're seeing is either that, a midwayer, there's lots of explanations of other things that could cause that, you know. But I according to the book, human beings are not allowed to return to the planet. Now, people say, well, what about disembodied spirits? There is no such thing as a disembodied spirit. Once you die, that which makes your spirit who you are is basically within your guardian angel. They are in charge of your soul. Okay? So there aren't any spirits running around that's not accounted for. That's what I'm saying.
So it's fair to say that the finite mind right now, you really can't comprehend yet. We haven't reached that level yet to where it's going to be identified by scientists and eventually recognized to get rid of that fear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing
because
is...
That helps. I mean, you know, that's a good answer.
The other thing we have to remember, too, is we're on a certain level of existence. And there's multiple levels of existence right now on this planet. You know, that we have Marantia beings on this planet, and they're on a different vibration level, you know? So it's also possible that some of the, we get little peaks by accident of some of these Marantia beings that are on this planet too. There's actually Marantia facilities, buildings on this planet right now that we cannot see. You could be standing right in the middle of it and you wouldn't know you were there. Just like the revelators that came to this planet to give us this book were standing at 333 in Chicago. And they said during the telling of this book that they could perceive the building, but they couldn't see it. Okay? So they didn't even, just like we can't see the Marantia buildings, because they're on a different vibratory level than we are.
It's amazing because I heard one psychic say back in my early days, the reason why ghosts, you see them like, you know, they're not really on a foundation, rooted foundation, because they're on another plane.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the easiest way to say it. And I've watched the shows, you know, like Ghost Hunters and things like that, several seasons and stuff, and seen all the
paranormal, or the little orbs.
Yeah, phenomena and all that stuff too.
And
it's all explainable if you understand, you know, what's going on in the universe. You know, and I guarantee you, they're not human ghosts. The other thing is too, time is not what we perceive it to be. You know, who knows that we can't hear a voice that said something in 100 years in the past? It's like a tape that keeps going over and over again because it's stuck in some kind of time. Yeah.
Yes, you know what that's referred to? According to a psychic, it's called a past impression.
When something
negative or an evil act was committed.
Yeah. They find that a lot around suicides. People who
right, it's called a past impression.
Yeah. Okay, did we read this yet?
No. Two, violence, obvious causes. The causes for some accidents and deaths were so easy to identify that they were early removed from the category of ghost action. Fatalities and wounds attendant on war, animal combat, and other readily identifiable agencies were considered as natural occurrences. But it was long believed that the spirits were still responsible for delayed healing or for the infection of wounds of even natural causation. If no observable natural agent could be discovered, the spirit ghosts were still held responsible for disease and death.
Okay, so they were pretty much blamed for everything. Today in Africa and elsewhere may be found primitive peoples who kill someone every time a non-violent death occurs. The medicine men indicate the guilty parties. If the mother dies in childbirth, the child is immediately strangled, a life for a life. How sad. Superstition will be lots of things, right? Nellie, would you take the next one, please?
Oh.
If we do three. The influence of enemies, much sickness, was thought to be caused by bewitchment, the action of the evil eye, and the magic pointing bow. At one time, it was really dangerous to point a finger at anyone. It's still regarded as ill mannered to point. In cases of obscure disease and death, the ancients would hold a formal inquest, dissecting the body, and settle on some finding as the cause of death. It's interesting. Otherwise, the death would be laid to witchcraft, thus necessitating the execution of the witch responsible for it. These ancient coroner's inquests saved many a supposed witch's life. Among some, it was believed that a tribesman could die as a result of his own witchcraft, in which the murderer was accused. Serves him right.
That's right. Messing around with own witchcraft. Tim, would you take the next one?
For sin, punishment for taboo violation. In comparatively recent times, it has been believed that sickness is a punishment for sin, personal or racial. Among peoples traversing this moment of evolution, the prevailing theory is that one cannot be afflicted unless one has violated a taboo. To regard sickness and suffering as arrows of the Almighty within them is typical of such beliefs. The Chinese and Mesopotamians long regarded disease as the result of the action of evil demons, although the Chaldeans also looked on the stars as the cause of suffering. This theory of disease as a consequence of divine wrath is still prevalent among many reputedly civilized groups. Yeah, Iranians, yeah, it's G-R-O-S, it's making a mistake again.
Groups.
At least they're consistent.
Yeah, really. Rodney, would you take the next one?
Number five, natural causation. Mankind has been very slow to learn the material secrets in the interrelationship of cause and effect in the physical domains of energy, matter, and life. Ancient Greeks have preserved the traditions of Adamson's teachings. We're among the first to recognize that all disease is the result of natural causes. Slowly encircling the unfolding of a scientific era, it's destroying man's age-old theories of sickness and death. Fever was one of the first human ailments to be removed from the category of supernatural disorders, and progressively the era of science has broken the fetters of ignorance which so long imprisoned the human mind. An understanding of old age and contagion has gradually obliterated man's fear of ghosts, spirits, and gods as the personal perpetrators of human misery and moral suffering.
You know, it's like I always say, getting old is not for sissies, right? That's what they're talking about here. Because we have a growing senior population, there's much less fear of ghosts and spirits and gods because there's less fear of dying. As people grow older, they eventually start to accept the fact that they're going to die and go on. You know, so it eases this fear of spirits and ghosts and things like that. So.
You know what it truly is? If you really examine death, it's also the fear of not existing. The fear of, am I going to be able to exist? Will I exist?
The fear of the unknown.
The fear of not existing is probably one of the most. But then, you know, the fear of how am I going to die? Is it going to be painful? But they say that death is truly as easy as walking through a door.
It is.
But usually it's, the fear of not existing that most people are so afraid of. Because that, sometimes I get scared too, but it's just, I remember what the Revelation teaches, having that faith, just like a child.
It all comes down to faith, Tim. If when Jesus was running around teaching, what was his main teaching? The fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of men. And if God is our Father and God is the Spirit, then we as sons of God eventually have to become Spirit. Right? So how else can we commune with the Father unless we are Spirit? So really it's a natural progression from human to Maranja to Spirit, because it's just like a stepping stone going to the source of our existence.
And I say that because eventually, in time, as we go through the ages, I'm telling you the truth that people, scientists, are going to even be able to make that so hard that they're going to tell you that, near-death experiences, they're going to tell you, we can explain. I mean, even today, doctors can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But just remember to have the simplest faith that acknowledging that you're a son or daughter of God and you're going to survive death.
Yeah,
and
it's
so easy a six-year-old can do it. Yeah. But I promise you that people in the near future will make it so complicated, they're going to say, the atheists were right. I mean, and they weren't.
Yeah. Hopefully not.
I'm with the comedian who says, I don't want to die, I just want to be where it happens. It's the fear of the indignity, the pain that the doctors the incontinence and someone having to take care of you.
Yeah, that's
not nice.
The fear of the hospitals and the doctors. Actually, if you think about it, the doctors, being one in the past, are not that much different than the medicine man. People think it's this magical thing that doctors do, and it's not. It's just a natural progression of trial and error. That's what our medical society does. And we've gotten better at it over time. The surgeries they do now is amazing.
But there's a reason it's called practicing medicine.
That's right, that's what they call practicing. They don't say that it's perfected medicine, right?
They're still practicing.
That's right, still practicing. Let's go on. Who's this? Rodney?
I just heard it.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay.
Thank you. Evolution unerringly achieves its end. It imbues man with that
superstitious
fear of the unknown and dread of the unseen, which is the scaffolding for the God concept. And having witnessed the birth of an advanced comprehension of deity through the coordinate action of revelation, this same technique of evolution then unerringly sets in motion those forces of thought which will inexorably obliterate the scaffolding which has served its purpose.
Well, I know a lot of corrections. Medicine under the shamans.
Shamans.
Shamans. The entire life of ancient man was a prophylactic. That's what it says. Their religion was in no small measure a technique for disease prevention. And regardless of their error in the theory, they were wholehearted in putting them into effect. They had unbounded faith and their methods of treatment, and that in itself is a powerful remedy. And doctors will tell you all the time, 80% of the patients that come to see you will heal themselves if you let them.
That's And that's in Jesus' ministry, it was that way too.
What's that, Roger? That they would what? Kill themselves?
Heal themselves. The body is a self-healing body.
Oh, well, I thought you said kill.
No. The body is a self-healing organism, and if you allow it to, most things it will heal itself of. When you get overrun by bacteria and things like that, many times the medicines just become necessary. That's all there is to it. But the body is a self-healing mechanism. And they used to teach us in medical school that 80% of the patients that walk in the door, once they see you, they feel better just because they've seen you. You know?
And hey, Roger.
It's the 20% that makes you a good doctor. Yeah.
I once went into a shop called the Dancing Moon. It was a metaphysical shop.
Uh-huh.
And the woman went up to the counter and said, I have a headache. And the woman said, here. Try these rocks. I tapped her on the shoulder and said, here, man, take two of these. She was given a rock to cure her headache.
Yeah.
And her two aspirins.
Maybe that's why people love rock and roll.
I suspect what she wanted was for the woman to put the rocks on her head.
Probably.
That's
that would go along with the rocks in her head, too. That's good. Let's keep it.
The faith required to get well under the foolish ministrations of one of these ancient shamans was, after all, not materially different from that which is required to experience healing at the hands of some of his latter-day successors who engage in the non-scientific treatment of disease.
Yeah, there's a lot of them around today still. Rodney.
The more primitive tribes greatly feared the sick, and for long ages they were carefully avoided, shamefully neglected. It was a great advance in
humanitarianism.
Thank you. Humanitarianism. When the evolution of shamancraft produced priests and medicine men who consented to treat disease, then it became customary for the entire clan to crowd into the sick room to assist the shaman in healing the diseased ghosts away. It was not uncommon for a woman to be the diagnosing shaman, while a man would administer treatment. The usual method of diagnosing disease was to examine the entrails of an animal.
You know what that is, right? The intestines of an animal, which means absolutely nothing.
Disease was treated by chanting, howling, laying on of hands, breathing on the patient, and many other techniques. In later times, a resort to temple sleep, during which healing supposedly took place, became widespread. The medicine men eventually essayed actual surgery in connection with temple slumber. Among the first operations was that of
trephining
the skull to allow a headache spirit to escape. The shamans learned to treat fractures and dislocations to open boils and abscesses. The shamanesses became adept at midwifery.
What they're talking about with the skulls, that actually drill a little hole in the skull, take a little piece out so that the headache can get out.
You know, and in the show we just saw yesterday, actually, on Unearth, they actually, the one before that,
with the gladiators,
they would actually do that.
Yeah.
And it helped them.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of chanting, Roger, there's some organizations, I'm not going to name any, but they believe that by chanting, God is present in his holy names.
Uh-huh.
But if you don't chant, God is not present, and we know better.
Yeah, we do. See, that's the thing of, I feel sorry for people that didn't understand the function of the thought adjuster, because God is always with us. He's never away from us. So, you know, we don't have to go through these exorbitant procedures to get God to listen. All we have to do is talk to God.
Well, I think sometimes because, you know, as a singer, when you sing, when you, you know, you do the chanting, it does elevate your consciousness.
Makes you closer.
Sure it does. Yes. There are benefits to chanting, I will say that.
I say a lot of my prayer, I chant a lot of my prayers because it just feels, I feel so connected.
But what I'm just saying is that, you know, we know better that you don't have to chant to keep the presence of God around you. God is dwelling within you. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yes, there's benefits to affirmations and chanting and meditation. Wonderful benefits to be gained. And then do it.
Yeah.
Let's go on. Who's up?
Gene, I don't know why I keep on listening to this.
It's mine then. Okay, it was a common method of treatment to rub something magical on an infected or blemished spot of the body, throw the charm away, and supposedly experience a cure. If any witch should chance to pick the discarded charm, it was believed he would immediately acquire the infection or blemish. It was a long time before herbs and other real medicines were introduced. Massage was developed in connection with incantation. Rubbing the spirit of the body and was preceded by efforts to rub medicine in, even as moderns attempt to rub ailments in. I don't know what that's supposed to be. Coping, I think. Cupping. And sucking the affected parts together with bloodletting were thought to be of value in getting rid of disease producing spirit. Millie.
Since water was a potent fetish, it was utilized in treating many ailments. For long, it was believed that the spirit causing the sickness could be eliminated by sweating. Vapor baths were highly regarded. Natural hot springs soon blossomed as primitive health resorts. Early man discovered that the heat would relieve pain. He used sunlight, fresh animal organs, hot clay and hot stones, and many of these methods are still involved. Rhythm was practiced in an effort to influence the spirits. The tom toms were universal.
Hope nobody's mad at us, but we're revealing truth, guys.
I know. We always step on a lot of salt and toes every week.
About 5,000 years from now, it's all going to make sense, guys, okay?
Yeah.
Take it from Tim.
Tim knows.
I rocks for a world. Like, never the sun should be. You get a hot rock with that. What's the coolest work?
It does.
Tim, would you take the next one, please?
Among some people, disease was thought to be caused by a wicked conspiracy between spirits and animals. This gave rise to the belief that there existed a benefit plant remedy for every animal caused disease. The red men were especially devoted to the plant theory of universal remedies. They also put a drop of blood in the root hole left when the plant was pulled.
When the plant was pulled up.
Yeah. As payment for the plant. Ronnie, would you take the next one, please?
Fasting, dieting, encountering irritants were often used as remedial measures. Human secretions, being definitely magical, were highly regarded. Blood and urine were used thus among the earliest medicines and were soon augmented by roots and various salts. Shamans believe that diseased spirits can be driven out of the body by foul-smelling and bad-tasting medicines. Purging very early became routine treatment, and values of raw coco and quinine were among the earliest pharmaceutical discoveries.
The Greeks were the first to evolve truly rational methods of treating the sick. Both the Greeks and the Egyptians received their medical knowledge from the Euphrates Valley. Oil and wine was a very early medicine for treating wounds. Castor oil and opium were used by the Sumerians. Many of these ancient and effective secret remedies lost their power when they became known. Secrecy has always been essential to the successful practice of fraud and superstition. Only facts and truth count, court the full light of comprehension and rejoice in the illumination and enlightenment of scientific research.
Priests and rituals. The essence of the ritual is the perfection of its performance. Among savages, it must be practiced with exact precision. It is only when the ritual has been correctly carried out that the ceremony possesses compelling power over the spirits. If the ritual is faulty, it only arouses the anger and resentment of the gods. Therefore, since man's slowly evolving mind conceived that the technique of ritual was the decisive factor in its effectiveness, it was inevitable that early shamans should sooner or later evolve to a priesthood trained to direct the meticulous practice of the ritual. And so for tens of thousands of years, endless rituals have hampered society and cursed civilization, have been an intolerable burden to every act of life, every racial undertaking. Now, we are talking about priesthood, y'all, right? Millie, did you take the next one?
Ritual is the technique of sanctifying custom. Ritual cleans and perpetuates myths as well as contributing to the preservation of social and religious customs. Again, ritual itself has been covered by myths. Rituals are often at first social and later becoming economic and finally acquiring the sanctity and dignity of religious ceremony. Ritual may be personal or group in practice, or both, as illustrated by prayer, dancing, and drama.
Words became a part of rituals, such as the use of terms like amen and zileia. The habit of swearing profanity represents a prostitution of formal ritualistic repetition of holy names. The making of the pilgrimage to sacred shrines is a very ancient ritual. A ritual next grew into elaborate ceremonies of purification, cleansing, and sanctification. The initiation ceremonies of the primitive tribal secret societies were in reality a crude religious rite. The worship technique of the Odin mystery cults was just one long performance of accumulated religious ritual. Ritual finally developed into the modern type of social ceremonies, and religious worship. Services embracing prayer, song, responsive reading, and other individual groups, spiritual devotions.
Open culture. Rodney.
By the priestly world, for shamans, clericals, divine healers, singers, dancers, weathermen, guardians of religious relics, temple custodians, and foretellers of events, to the statue of actual directors of religious worship. Eventually, the office became hereditary, a continuous priestly task.
And that started with whom? Seth, the Sethite priest, right?
As religion evolved, priests began to specialize according to their innate talents or special
predilections.
Some became singers, others prayers, and still others sacrificers. Later came the orators, preachers. And when religion became institutionalized, these priests claimed to hold the keys of heaven.
The priests have always sought to impress and awe the common people by conducting the religious ritual in an ancient tongue and by sundry magical passes so to mystify the worshippers as to enhance their own piety and authority. The great danger in all this is that the ritual tends to become a substitution for religion. To strip back all our fantasies, really.
The priesthood has done much to delay scientific development and to hinder spiritual progress, but they have contributed to the stabilization of civilization and to the enhancement of certain kinds of culture. What many modern priests have ceased to function as directors of the ritual of the worship of God, and in turn their attention to theology, the attempt to be found God.
Tim.
It is not denied that the priests have been a millstone about the neck of the races. But the true religious leaders have been invaluable in pointing the way to higher and better realities. Presented by Melchizedek of Nebadon. That was fantastic.
That was an interesting paper. Next week we'll start with the evolution of prayer. We pulled back a lot of myths today. Let's have a little prayer and then we'll close for the night. Rodney, would you like to pray for us tonight?
Heavenly Father, we give thanks for each and every one of us for the opportunity that we have had to come together this evening to study this paper on shamanism, medicine, and prayers. And we pray for guidance and wisdom and insight to discern these truths. We hope our minds on the earth, we may share it for being heard with other people. Now we give thanks to you, Heavenly Father. Your will be done. Amen.
Amen. And thank you at home for joining us. Please give us this again.